Hey y'all, trigger warning. Before you listen to this episode, just wanted to mention that there is talk of suicide and suicidal ideation.
I am not the sum of my neuroses.
There you go.
Or my diagnoses.
That'll be our t-shirt.
I think that's a great idea. those things just don't have to define you. They are a part of you. And you can't pretend that they're not.
Right.
But it's helped me to accept them, to say, yeah, I am bipolar. I am crazy. Whatever. But that's not my fault. You know, I didn't do anything to cause that. It's just how I am, and all I can do is treat it. All I can do is accept it and work with what I have.
And this is episode 21 of the Pillow Fort Sessions podcast. Back in the fort, which is nice. And Snit is already asleep, which is also cool. And we are here with my cross-stitching bud, originally. The OG who taught me how to do it. Chirica. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for volunteering to be in the fort. Super excited about this episode. So before we get started, I'm gonna ask you the same thing that I ask everybody else, but disclaimer, you are not yet a therapist.
That is correct.
But you're thinking about it.
I am thinking about it, yes.
So why are you thinking about being a therapist as opposed to a professional breakdancer?
Well, I have the inner workings,
You're good.
My body's basically like an 80-year-old woman's at this point, so breakdancing would not be for me.
Okay.
Body just would not agree with that.
Same.
Therapy's something that I've been thinking about for a long time. As someone who's been in therapy off and on for a long time, mm-hmm. It's something that has helped me a lot. I know a lot of people who have benefited from it, and it's a place where I feel like I could help benefit other people. I've always wanted to work in a field where I was helping people. I never wanted to let anyone I knew feel how I've felt in the past due to my mental illness.
Right.
And if I can do anything to help others not feel the things I've felt or understand the things that they're feeling, the way that I've come to understand them, I think that that would be really fulfilling to me.
Absolutely. I think that's a beautiful reason to go into it. I think that's why a lot of us go into it, is because we've been there. So you're already, like, going the right direction.
I'm glad to hear it.
And we can definitely talk about that more towards the end of, like, you know, what are your plans and what are you hoping to, accomplish, like, in the future, and timelines are kind of, like, irrelevant right now, but...
Yeah. We'll see. Time's a social construct.
True. So, though you're not a therapist or a breakdancer, I wanted to have you on the show anyway because I think that you have, a really interesting and... I think really informative view on medication because of your history, like you said, with therapy and with psychiatry, that I feel like people really need to hear to be more comfortable with the idea of meds. There's a lot of stigma around taking medication. So first of all, what has your experience with therapy and psychiatry been like over the years?
My experience started very young.
Okay.
I was, I believe, 12 when I started seeing a therapist. My parents were getting divorced, and so I was lashing out a lot. I was really angry. But I remember being depressed for what felt like a really long time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know what it was that I was depressed or anything. I just kind of, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Looking back, I was like, wow, I was struggling for a while and didn't really understand what was happening because I was so young.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents put me into therapy, and it was just a child therapist who wasn't the most helpful to me at that point in time because I wasn't yet diagnosed with any disorders. They kind of just thought that I had anger issues because of my parents' divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Saw her for a while. Didn't really find that it helped because she seemed to be treating the wrong thing. She was treating the anger, but not really the source. Yeah. So saw her for a while. Ended up seeing a different therapist a while later. Probably, I think I saw that one for like a year. I saw a different one when I was probably 15. I saw someone else when I was like 13, 14, and I saw a third one when I was 15. And I just had a hard time finding the right help.
Okay.
So I saw a few different ones. I ended up finding one that I really liked who ended up putting me on medication, spent a lot of time with me, and was like, you don't have anger issues. You have issues with basically my emotions don't register correctly.
Okay.
At that time, I was diagnosed as being bipolar, mm-hmm. Which is a diagnosis that still stands. And the biggest thing for me at the time, which is still very much present when I'm not on medication, is that instead of having a whole slew of emotions, I only seem to have polar opposites.
Oh.
There is not just me being bummed or me being a little annoyed or ticked off or sad. It's just a whole range of emotions like a lot of people feel normally.
Mm-hmm.
So I got put on medication at that time. And luckily enough for me, the first things that I went on seemed to help.
Okay.
I know that's not the case for a lot of people, and that's been a heavy deterrent for a lot of people I know, is that the first things you try don't work for you.
Right, so people get prescribed something, and then they don't feel the immediate relief, and so they're like, oh, medicine doesn't work.
Right, or I know a lot of people who have had experiences where they try medication, and they end up feeling like a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
They still don't have the right range of emotions. They don't just feel normal. They just feel different. They don't feel like themselves. And like I said, I was lucky enough that the first few things that I tried, I was on an antidepressant and an antipsychotic, because I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety as well as the bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
That was, my diagnosis came when I was 15. But although the medication worked for me, I couldn't accept it. I felt better when I was on it, but I didn't want to take 6 pills a day.
Right.
I wanted to go hang out with my friends. I wanted to drive around. I just got my license. I wanted to stay out late, and I didn't want to be bothered taking pills. I was embarrassed. I felt like it made me weak, that I needed them.
Yeah.
It felt like it didn't feel like, I don't know, I guess felt like I needed them to be normal and I didn't want to need them. I didn't think that that was fair or okay, so I just wouldn't stay on them. And I spent, it had to be from the ages of 15 to 18, on and off my meds.
Mm.
I'd go on them for a while, and then I'd go off, and I'd get really bad. I'd go back on them, and I'd go off, but I just couldn't keep it up. I hated it.
Yeah.
I just couldn't accept it. It just didn't feel fair.
Because your friends are, quote-unquote, normal.
Right.
Did they know that you were dealing with these mental health issues?
Not really. My best friend at the time did. Boyfriend I had at the time did. But they didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
They knew, but they didn't get it. I spent a lot of time feeling guilty. Guilty that I needed the medication, guilty that I wasn't taking the medication, just a lot of guilt for everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 28 now, so it's been a long time of me being medicated and unmedicated. It's been a long journey.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the time periods are kind of blurry. I can't remember what I was doing, if I was Medicaid or not. I remember one instance in particular, though, when I was 17, I think, or 18, and I was having a lot of anxiety. I wasn't medicated. I had a lot of anxiety, and I kept ditching school because I just couldn't be there. I was so incredibly anxious. I didn't want to be in public.
Mm-hmm.
Later that year, I got diagnosed with agoraphobia. I didn't leave the house for 3 months.
Wow.
When things get that bad for me, because I'm not medicated, it turns into that.
Yeah.
It's all really anxiety-induced. And I remember skipping school, and I was just having a bad time. Nothing felt right. Everything just felt wrong and bad. And I remember texting my mom and just being like, I'm not at school. I need to go to the doctor. I need you to take me to the doctor. And I was like, I'm ready to go back. We went to several therapists who said they couldn't help me.
Mm-hmm. Why? Is it that their job?
They said that I had there was just too many things wrong with me.
Now, I want to put a caveat on this, is that we're both from similar areas in upstate South Carolina. Kind of rural, little bit slow paced.
Yes, not very progressive.
Not very progressive. And so, while I'm shocked that people who have degrees would say something like that, I'm also not shocked that those people exist. I hate that.
Yeah. There were a lot of places that weren't taking in patients. There were a lot of places that were like, oh, well, you know, you just need to find somebody else. I just remember being very distraught. Ended up finding someone, I think eventually, but that was a bad experience. She broke doctor-patient confidentiality. Wow. I wasn't speaking to my dad at the time, and so my dad wasn't allowed any information about my visits or mm-hmm. my care there. My parents were separated. My mom and I were the only ones on the documents. I was underage, so my mom had access to everything, but my dad did not. We were very explicit about that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my dad knew that that's where I was getting care, but that's it. And it wasn't a bad situation where, like, my dad was, not safe for me to be around, or like mm-hmm. there wasn't a very particular reason for him not to have information. It was just that I didn't want him to, because we weren't speaking to each other at the time after the divorce.
More information.
And he called, found out when my visit was. They told him when my visit was. He met with my psychiatrist before I went in. And so I just show up, and he's just there. And she's like, yeah, we're going to talk to your dad today.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was just like, no, I'm done.
Yeah.
Never went back to her.
That, again, is very shocking from a educational standpoint, because we know not to do that. But that does not surprise me about upstate South Carolina, because, of course, they want you to repair the nuclear family, so... Your dad is here. Talk to him.
Right.
To patch things up.
Yep. Like,
this way.
Exactly. And we're good now. It's taken a lot. But my dad, I've been good for a while. But I was a kid, and there was a lot going on. And what she did was not okay with me.
Absolutely not.
So I took a long break from therapy after that. And had another stint, I think, where I had my mom take me to the ER one night because I was feeling suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And the medications that I take obviously aren't something that you just take one and then you just feel better.
Right.
You have to get them in your system. You have to stay on them for them to work. There's one that my antipsychotic takes a while for it to really take effect. Like, you have to be on it for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was at the ER, and the first thing they do is, you know, what are you feeling? What are you thinking about? And I was like, well, I want to kill myself. And they asked, well, how would you do it? And I was like, just take a bunch of pills. The amount of medication at that point I had just stockpiled because I wasn't taking it was tremendous.
Wow.
And I was very honest with the doctor about that. So he gave me some Prozac and sent me home. Most people, I think, have had a similar reaction to Prozac as I did, though, where it makes it worse. It's not really a common one for people to be on anymore.
Yeah, but it has some negative side effects.
It does. Sure. And I was already kind of feeling one extreme,
mm-hmm.
and it just pushed me over the edge. So, luckily enough, I was cognizant of it,
mm-hmm.
and so I didn't continue taking it. It did push me to go back on the medications I knew worked for me.
Right.
But, you know, over the past 15 plus years, I've been on and off medication for a long time, probably off of it for most of the time. And if there's one thing that I wished I could have told myself in the beginning, it would just be, you know, trust the medication.
Mm-hmm.
Trust your doctors. Because it is going to help. It's nothing to feel ashamed about. And you can't feel guilty when you don't do it either.
Right.
I've been so hard on myself about it so much in my life. The best thing I ever did was realize that I needed the medication and that was okay. And to accept that. You know, my brain isn't wired how quote-unquote normal people's are. And that's okay. I just need medication in order to feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing that I try to tell people when I'm talking to my friends who are thinking about medication or are scared of medication. Yes, you may take something that doesn't work for you and you may feel like a zombie. Or it may not work. Maybe it'll make it worse. You have to be self-aware. You have to be cognizant of it. You have to pay attention to the signs. You have to be very open and candid with your doctors. Because they want to know. If it's not working, if it makes you feel worse. They want you to find something that's going to work. Not every antidepressant, not every antipsychotic, not every medication for mental illness is going to make you feel like a zombie or make you feel worse. There is going to be something that works.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I knew I found the right thing when the right combination of things, when I felt like me. When I'm not medicated, that's the biggest thing, is I don't feel like me then. I feel like people get confused and, yeah, like, I'm unmedicated if I'm bipolar and I'm having these mood swings and I'm having anxiety and depression and I'm struggling, but at least I'm, like, vibrant and alive. At least I'm, like, feeling things. And then they go on medication and it's muted. And so that, they misinterpret it.
Hmm.
And to them, that it feels wrong. Because they don't understand that that's how you're supposed to feel. You know, you're not supposed to feel all the extremes.
All the time.
So, yeah, so trust the medication sometimes. If just because you feel a more muted version of things at first, that doesn't mean that, you know, that that's wrong or bad. Maybe that's your normal. Maybe that's, like, how you're supposed to feel, like, I never knew what it was like to just be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was always so severely depressed, or like 2% of the time would be manic.
Mm-hmm.
I was never just okay. So at first, when people feel okay for the first time, they confuse it with, oh, I feel like a zombie, or, oh, well, now I just, like, don't feel anything. It's like, sometimes you just don't feel anything. That's normal. You don't always have to have a severe reaction to something.
Right. Sometimes you're just going to brush your teeth and you're just going to be brushing your teeth.
Yeah, and there's just not anything going on. And that's an incredible feeling when you're not used to that.
Right.
You just have to stick with it and you just have to try. I spent so long just hating the fact that I'd have to take medication and accepting it and leaning into it and letting it help me is the best thing that I've ever done.
How did you get to that insight or to that revelation where you're like, okay, I'm okay with this now?
I think it's just getting so low that it was like, what do I do now?
Mm.
I don't have a will to live. I don't care what happens to me. I don't feel any self-worth anymore. I don't feel anything. It got to the point where I wasn't even depressed anymore. I just didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
I was apathetic. It just got so bad that I was like, all right, well, I can't live like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's either I don't live anymore and I kill myself, or I got to get better because I can't live like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to get better. I don't know. It's been a long time coming. Right. I'm glad that I finally reached that point. And that was only a few years ago. I've been steadily medicated for the past 2.5 years, and that's the longest that I've been medicated in the entire 15 plus years since my diagnosis.
Wow. So what has the past 2.5 years been like? Has it been so incredibly normal that you're bored to death?
Right? A little bit of that sometimes, and I welcome it. It's great. I love it. I feel productive. I am trying to set goals. I feel like that's a big thing too, is I spent so long unmedicated and just trying to get through the day.
Right.
That I didn't learn how to set goals.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know where I was going to be in a year. I didn't know if I'd still be alive then or what I would feel like. So I just didn't have that skill. I don't have that skill. I got to the point where I think when I turned like 27, where I was just like, all right, what now? And then when I turned 28 this year, I kind of revisited that. It's like, what now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm good. What do I want my future to look like? Because in the past, I didn't see that I had one.
Right.
And now I do, so what do I want to do with it? And that's part of why I've been thinking about, you know, getting into therapy and going back to school and everything. I want to have a future.
Right.
I want to do something with my life. And I think that maybe my experiences can help people. So that's the way that I know how to help people. It's by getting into stuff like that and trying to help other people realize the things that I've realized and help them navigate things, because I've been there. There's a long time. It's something I've thought about for a long time. And I spent most of my time telling myself it was a pipe dream because nobody would ever hire me because I have a history of mental illness. I have several neuroses. It's a lot. I just assumed that I would look unreliable to anybody.
Mm.
But I really think that all of that is just something that could make me a better advocate for other people.
Right. It's going to make you an amazing empathic therapist. For sure. But I want to also acknowledge that when you were thinking those things about yourself and people maybe thinking those things about themselves, like, I'm not reliable, what is the point? But is that them thinking that stuff? Or is that just the lack of medication, the lack of treatment, sort of? Is that really you that's not reliable? Or is that right. the person who's unmedicated that's not reliable and not useful and doesn't have any goals or whatever?
That's definitely me if I were unmedicated. There's still so much taboo about mental illness. And it's obviously stuff you wouldn't have to disclose to an employer.
Right.
But there's been a big part of me in the past that have just kind of beat myself down and continued to feel heavy guilt for just being born this way.
Yeah, and I was gonna ask, that's why I asked earlier, like, who around you knew? I feel like people, a lot of the stigma that comes around medication and mental illness comes from the idea that, like, everybody's gonna know and everybody's gonna find out.
Right.
But really, the only person that's judging you and stigmatizing you is you.
Yeah, that's been a big thing for me. I definitely always judged myself and guilt-tripped myself a lot. I never really had anyone in my life that was doing that to me. It was just me.
Yeah.
Which is probably part of the mental illness also.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And in your worst, darkest moments, you're going to be the one that's like, look, see what happened? Or, look, see, obviously you're not doing anything.
Right.
You know, just really beating yourself up. And there's all these people on the outside or doctors that are going to tell you, you know, this will pass once you're in a better mental state and you are in a clearer headspace to goal set, to plan, to prepare for your future. But until then, I mean, it's just like a terrible best friend that's always around.
Right.
It's like, you suck. And you're like, I know that's not true because nobody else is telling me that. But
right.
I'm just going to keep listening to myself. It's, for lack of a better term, crazy, but it seems like you're really saying once you got over the hump of medication is okay because me right now is not okay,
mm-hmm.
you were able to accept the fact that it's here to help and not hurt.
Absolutely. And I am lucky right now to have an amazing doctor who listens to me and I know wants the best for me. She's constantly, you know, asking how the medications are going,
mm-hmm.
how Aptide is, how they're working together, if there's anything going on. Since I've seen her, we've added medications and taken some away and changed some stuff. I'm glad that I got over the having to take a bunch of pills every day thing, because I take a lot of pills every day. I take more now. Now I think in addition to just an antipsychotic and an antidepressant, I also take anxiety medication as needed.
Mm-hmm.
I take a sleeping aid because I have a lot of I have anxiety-induced insomnia related to PTSD that I suffer from,
mm-hmm.
where I have sleep paralysis and night terrors.
Mm-hmm.
So I get so anxious that they're going to happen that I suffer from insomnia and I just don't sleep because I'm so nervous and anxious that the sleep paralysis and the night terrors will happen.
Right.
So I just don't sleep for just days. And that's... Honestly, that's one of the worst feelings, is every part of your body just wanting to be asleep and you just can't.
Right.
It just never comes. So we added a sleeping pill, and then I'm actually on a medication for the sleep paralysis that has been amazing. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Me neither.
I guess it's interesting how that one works. That one actually lowers your blood pressure. Which I can't confirm if that is why it works or if it's just a side effect of it. But when I started it, she was like, yeah, it's something that we can try. It's not like a very commonly used one. It's something that you, it might work for you. We'll just have to see. But it lowers your blood pressure. So if you get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom or something, just be aware. You know, get up slower.
So you don't faint.
Yeah. There were a few occasions when I first started it where I'd forget, get up in the middle of the night, and I would collapse.
No, no.
I was fine, but I did fall on the floor and then have to get back up and get in bed. But it's been incredible. Leaning into medication with a doctor who is very caring has helped a lot. I don't think that you need to be on medication for every little thing.
Right, of course.
I've added some. I've taken some away, like I said. You just have to find the right thing that works for you, the right mix of stuff, the right combos.
Yeah.
There's medications that don't work well together.
Yeah.
It's a very tedious thing. You have to be very meticulous about it. And I'm very lucky to have a doctor who checks in on me. And when I start something new, she's always available in case something changes or something happens or we need something. I trust her completely. And she trusts me. And I think that's a big thing, having your doctor trust you, because you have to be able to tell them what you need.
Right.
And she's always been very open to what I need. I've had doctors who weren't. They were just like, well, I'm the doctor, so I'm going to give you what I think you need. And it didn't work. That doesn't always work.
Right.
You know, it has to be a partnership. And I feel like I have that with her, and that's great. Since I've been on my antidepressant for 2.5 years now, I have had a side effect that most people have probably had, where I've gained a bunch of weight, gained about 40 pounds now, and I spoke to my doctor about it a few weeks ago, and although the medication helps me, I'm getting to the point now where we're talking about maybe moving me to something else.
Mm-hmm.
I am getting to a point where I'm uncomfortable with the weight.
Okay.
I don't know that it's healthy because the medication's causing it. So we've been looking at alternatives, which I was very honest with her. That terrifies me.
Mm.
What I am on works.
Right.
And the thought of not being on it and being on something else just paralyzes me. When I'm not on my antidepressant for 2 days, I already have OCD symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
It's very quick. And she was very, very fast to tell me, no, no, no. We would be best friends. You would taper off your dose.
Right.
You would start something else at the same time. You would never be off medication. Cool. And we would be in contact the entire time.
Nice.
She's like, you're not doing that alone. And it's not going to be anything to have anxiety about, because I know how to do this correctly. We're going to do it correctly.
Nice.
And so I have a meeting with her, or an appointment with her in a few weeks, to reevaluate that and decide if it's something that we want to do. We'd have to, I think, bump up my antipsychotic while we're doing it. There's, like, a lot involved, and
it's
very nervous, at the same time, I really do trust her.
Yeah.
And it might be the best thing, and it might not work, and I know that. It might not be, the medication I try next might not be what works.
But you're going into it with that mindset.
Right, and I'm lucky to be someone who is very self-aware. Mm-hmm. And I know what things to look for, having been on and off medication so much.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I know how to tell when something's not working, or when it's not working yet,
mm-hmm.
or when it's giving me side effects. So I don't want people to think, oh, like, I'm lucky because the first things that I took worked for me, and that's just great because that might not be the case now. Right. I might have to go on something that doesn't work for me.
Right.
But I'm willing to do it because I know that that's part of the process.
That's part of the process, and you want to negate this other side effect that you feel like is also important to you.
Absolutely. So,
which is fair. I feel like a lot of people, even me, when I was transferred or, you know, switching medications, sort of just was like, well, the doctor knows what they're talking about. I feel bad, and I'm gaining weight, and I'm not sleeping, but the doctor put me on it, so I guess I'll just stay on it.
Right.
But that's, again, like you said, that's something that you need to be open about, and you don't want to be on this medication because it's making you gain weight. So can at least ask. The worst you can do is say no. That's just going to
happen. I asked her. I was just like, you know, it's something I've noticed. Actually, we raised my antidepressant. I did a thing that I do not recommend doing, which is unearthing past traumas without a therapist. It's not great. Oh. Don't do it. And I got kind of in a little hole for about a week because I was trying to work through stuff by myself that I really shouldn't have been. And I talked to her about it. I was just like, hey, this thing happened. I dug up some memories. I was trying to work through some trauma. She immediately was like, you know better than that. Right. I was like, I know that I do. And she was like, all right, well, let's talk about getting you back into therapy because I haven't been seeing a therapist for a little while now. And she's like, let's talk about getting you back into that now that, you know, you're getting to the point where you're ready to work on things.
Yeah.
But let's up your antidepressant in the meantime. That'll help kind of curb it, you know. And so we talked about it, and we did. And then I gained 5 pounds in a week and kind of realized, oh, maybe being on this consistently is why I've gained all this weight. And the first 20 pounds or so was healthy. Or it wasn't a detriment to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was very small. I was about 110 pounds, 115 pounds. And so I gained 20 pounds, and it was great. My blood pressure was very low. It has been my entire life, and now it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that had to do with my low weight. I knew that I was underweight for my height. I'm 5'2". But it wasn't like I was unhealthily underweight or anything. Mm-hmm. But I gained weight and I looked healthier. I felt better.
Mm-hmm.
My blood pressure was better. It was great. But now it's getting to the point where I don't know if it will stop.
Mm.
I just don't want it to be unhealthy for me.
Fair enough.
Because I keep gaining it. So I was very open with her about that. I asked her, you know, is there any of my medications that could cause weight gain? And she named my antidepressant immediately.
Oh, man. Mike's nodding.
Yeah, I...
been there, done that.
I take Abilify,
okay.
Which a lot of people don't take, from what I understand. It's something that I obviously got put on 15-plus years ago,
right.
And I think it was more common then. There's a lot of things now that are more common than Abilify, and she told me that. She was like, you know, a lot of people don't really take that anymore, but it works for you, so you've stayed on it.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, there are newer things that will have that won't have those side effects. One of the side effects of Abilify is symptoms of, I can't remember the name of it. I don't think I'd pronounce it correctly if I could. But there's this restlessness, this like nerve pain that you get from this medication specifically. And I thought that I had restless leg syndrome for like years. But then there were times when my entire body felt restless and my all my nerves and things were like firing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, the only way I can explain it is I was just uncomfortable. Everything hurt and was like moving and itchy and like restless at the same time. And I would like panic. Like I never knew what it was. And I stumbled upon somebody in a forum talking about how they struggle taking Abilify because of this side effect. And I was on a much higher dose several years ago. I'm on a very low dose of it now. So it doesn't happen to me now. But that's something that my doctor has asked me about. The last psychiatrist I had never asked me about it. And I didn't know it existed. This doctor makes a point to be like, hey, have you, you know, we are upping your antidepressant. This is the thing we need to look out for. And I was like, oh yeah, that thing that I have experienced. Yes, I will look out for that.
Yes.
So there are new things, she said, that have less side effects than this medication. That will probably be a better fit. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm nervous and also excited to, you know, figure it out. It's always a process. That's the thing, too. You can be on something for a long time, and eventually it might just stop working.
It's a tunnel friend. 10 years is a tunnel friend.
Yeah.
Just because I was like, I guess this is the only one, and just didn't want to go to a doctor and try anything else because I was afraid of the side effects.
And I think those fears are really valid. I think everybody's worries and anxieties about medication are very valid, but you can't let it stop you from getting help, because it can be a tremendous help.
Right.
I know there are people that think that, you know, changing your lifestyle and routines and stuff like that can make a big difference, and yeah, they can, but I feel like it all needs to work together. It's like a little mental health ecosystem.
It is.
And there's a lot of factors. I mean, if changing your lifestyle and your routines and stuff, it works for you and you don't need medication, holy crap, like, good for you.
Right?
That's awesome. I wish that were the case with me and millions of other Americans and people around the world, but, you know, it's not the case all the time. And that's okay.
Right.
Hey, everybody, this is Mike.
And this is Nicole.
And we're from the Pillowfort Sessions podcast.
You probably already knew that, though.
Yeah. We want to take the time to tell you about an affiliate that we've been using during the crazy times of pandemic world.
Yes, we have been using Instacart.
Instacart's great. I use it to shop at Publix, but you can use it to shop at a multitude of stores.
Wegmans.
Wegmans.
Publix.
Food Lion, Target.
Aldi.
Costco.
All the stores.
Total Wine. I mean, I feel like, is that region specific?
Maybe, I don't know.
Either way, if you use the link in our show notes, it'll actually take you to the Instacart platform. It'll tell you to put in your zip code, and you'll actually be able to find out the stores near you that you can use. You can shop all of those stores in a single order, and you can have those hand-selected by a shopper for you based on your preferences, and they'll bring all of that to your door in as fast as 1 hour.
And you don't even have to go to the grocery store where there could possibly be COVID or just too many options, which is really stressful if you're me.
True. It's very anxiety provoking for Nicole. So we use it. It's honestly a great way to get our groceries. We've been working all day. We haven't had a chance to get out. It's a great way to get them shut right to your door.
So it helps the show out. And, you know, we don't make stacks during the show.
We don't actually make stacks at all. That's true. No stacks being made here, but if you use the link in our show notes, it'll actually help out the show.
So yeah, Instacart in our show notes. Check it out, help us, and enjoy the rest of the show.
So in the time that we have left, you are very open and honest about your bipolar diagnosis and about your medication use, and you want to use that for good. So what are you hoping to do now that you're in a better place? And as far as your therapy, maybe practicing goes.
Yeah. It's something I really need to look more into and figure out what kind of path I want to go down. Mm-hmm. I know that I want to help people. I think that I would really like to help young adults. Mm. I struggled so much as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And in my early 20s. And I want to get to people before it gets where it got for me, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
I want to help people develop healthier habits early on and recognize things early on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much more than that right now.
That's okay.
But that's where I'm starting.
That's a start. And when you say you want to help people figure out things that work, healthy coping skills, what are some ways that you do that? What are your self-care methods?
Routines are the biggest thing for me. So, talked about being bipolar, talked about having depression. I have borderline personality disorder as well, which is something many people who are bipolar do suffer from. Mm-hmm. That's something I had only got diagnosed with in the past year or so.
Yep, listen to episode
19. And so I have that going on. I mentioned having PTSD. That came from an abusive relationship, so I have that going on. Mm-hmm. A lot of obsessive compulsive thoughts, mm-hmm. Which luckily my antidepressant helps curb a lot of. I'm ADD, so I'm actually on medication for that as well. And I suffer from depersonalization. And it's a lot.
Depersonalization.
I go through bouts where I don't feel human. I will get to a point where I feel like there is nothing that I have in common with anyone else in the world. That the way that I feel, the way that I interpret the world around me, that we're just not on the same plane of existence, that I don't exist. The most recent bout I had, the majority of the time that I have had those depersonalization episodes, it's been very in my brain, mm-hmm. where I knew I wasn't real, and I didn't recognize myself in the mirror. A lot of times the episodes would start with me looking in the mirror and not recognizing the person I saw, mm-hmm. and I would dissociate completely
right.
from who I was and what I was. The more recent bout that I had, which happened after kind of trying to delve into trauma without help, right. That was more of a mental and physical episode, dissociation, where I didn't feel real either. Mm-hmm. I remember feeling like at any moment I would collapse into dust and blow away in the wind.
How do you deal with that? How do you come out of that?
Routines. That's the biggest thing for me. And everything that I suffer from and deal with, routines are my biggest thing. For that particular episode, I went to the grocery store, and I pushed through, and I came home, and I made spaghetti, because that's my comfort food,
yeah.
and it's something that I, like, have down pat, mm-hmm. so it was a routine for me. It was steps that I could go through that I was hoping would be grounding to me, mm-hmm. and would pull me back into reality.
There you go.
Routines are absolutely the biggest thing, and I know a lot of people are struggling with that right now, because your sense of normalcy is a little weird right now for everybody.
Yeah.
So you just, if your routines have to change, you have to replace them with other routines.
Yeah.
You can't just lose them. That's been the biggest coping mechanism for me, is finding routines, finding things to do. I'm not someone who does well with free time. I need to fill it up. I need to do stuff. I don't need to be alone with my thoughts and just sitting. I don't like that.
Same.
So I like to be doing something.
Like a podcast.
Cross-stitching, we talked about.
Cross-stitching, yes.
Reading.
Cross-stitching is very meditative. Reading is very meditative.
Anything.
You're also an amazing plant lady.
I do have a lot of plants. That is another coping mechanism. I'm someone who has a very nurturing way about them, I guess. I put a lot into people, a lot of energy into people and friendships and relationships. And, you know, sometimes you put things in other people and you just don't get anything back.
Amen.
And it's not healthy. It's not healthy to keep doing it. And it can be hurtful. And so I got to the point where I was like, you know what, I want to put that energy into something. And I put it into plants. Mm-hmm. And that's been very fulfilling for me. That's a really big coping mechanism for me, is putting energy into something that will be fulfilling, that is going to help me and not hurt me.
Yeah.
So that's been a fun one. So if anyone needs a hobby, I recommend houseplants.
It's not for everybody. Tried it. A lot of death. But you're doing a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. I think I'm at like 60 plus now.
Dang.
So
that is
something like that.
That is this has been like eye-opening for me. This has been an amazing, amazing episode. And I think that people who are maybe on the cusp of deciding whether or not they want to go through with reaching out to a therapist, or if they might feel like they have some symptoms of bipolar disorder, or any of the disorders that you mentioned, which, you know, again, I hope that you don't, and I feel like you don't beat yourself up about those, because, again, you are open and honest, and you're taking care of yourself, and you know what those look like, and you know how to deal with them when they happen, and sometimes it's talking to your psychiatrist, sometimes it's going to the grocery store, but you're taking care of it. You're not just like, well, it's another day, I'm just gonna ignore that.
That's the thing, I don't let it define me.
There you go.
I am not the sum of my neuroses.
There you go.
Or my diagnoses.
That'll be our t-shirt.
I think that's a great idea. those things just don't have to define you. They are a part of you. And you can't pretend that they're not.
Right.
But it's helped me to accept them, to say, yeah, I am bipolar. I am crazy. Whatever. But that's not my fault. You know, I didn't do anything to cause that. It's just how I am, and all I can do is treat it. All I can do is accept it and work with what I have. And I don't need to feel guilt over that. And going into new doctors, I'm always a little fearful and anxious because, like, oh, God, I have so many things wrong with me, and they're going to... There's been times I honestly thought the doctors would think that I was faking because there's just so many things.
Right.
It's like, well, that doesn't sound believable. But it is.
Yeah,
and
life.
It's my life. And I'm very upfront about that. I'm very open about it. I'm very open about my medication and everything that I have going on. Because it just is. It is what it is. And I just work with it. And I push through and I live my life. And like I said, I don't let it define me. It doesn't have to define you.
You're going to make a great therapist.
Thank you. I hope so.
You really are. That step one is empathy, and you got that in spades. And just very, very empowering to others. And your office is going to be super cute with all the plants.
Oh, so many plants.
So many plants.
And, I mean, if anybody's curious about any of the things that I've talked about, I'd tell us. I'll come back.
Right.
I'll shed some more light on what specific things if I need to.
Right. All your contact is going to, or your grams and stuff, we'll put them in the our gram.
Yeah, I am very open. Reach out to me if you have questions or concerns or want advice, anything. You just need to say, hey, I'm with you. You need to hear somebody say, hey, I know how you feel. I'm your girl.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Nice.
Let me know.
Nice. We will be sending people your way.
Perfect. I welcome it. Talk to me.
Well, thank you, Derica.
Thank you.
I'm so excited for this episode to go up in an hour and a half. but on that note, thank you, Smitty, for protecting us. And thanks. Sorry about the refrigerator noise. And hopefully, Jerica will see you back in the billboard at some point.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Pillowfort Sessions podcast. We so appreciate your curiosity. This show was edited and produced by me, Nicole Fortune, and my partner, Mike Young. Background sounds and general cuteness provided by Smitty Jerome the dog and Miles Morales the cat. If you're listening on iTunes, please subscribe and leave us a review. It helps people find us. If you want to see video versions of sessions and or follow us on the social medias, check out our website, pillowfortpod.com. Do you or someone you know want to be in the Pillow Fort? Go email us right now at pillowfortpod@gmail.com. Is that good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bye, y'all.